Moncrief on News Talk.
In France, there's a new variant on speed dating. Rather than the usual what's your job, what are your hobbies kind of conversation, the prospective couples are armed with a set of cards, each one relating to their favoured sexual fantasy. So far, the idea hasn't travelled outside France because, you know, it's France. But theoretically, is this a healthy approach to take with a person you've just met? Emily Power-Smith is a sex therapist. Afternoon, Emily.
Hello there.
As far as you understand, Emily, how does this work?
Well, I mean, I only know as much as you do, Sean, in that I've read the article and it sounds very interesting. I'm not sure all the cards are about sexual fantasies, but certainly some are. And it seems to be a way to cut through the conversation that you might have in speed dating more normally and get to the heart of the sexual side of things, which, you know, is going to suit some people, but that's not going to suit everyone, even in France.
Yeah, but if it's speed dating, is sex the heart of it? You're not trying to, you know, maybe get to know the person a bit?
I think it really depends on the person, doesn't it? There will be people, I would imagine from looking at the thing, she has different themed nights. So you probably know what you're getting into before you arrive. And it is probably your thing if you go to a one that is going to be based around sexual fantasies. So you're probably going there specifically to share yours and to learn about others because that is the heart of it for you. It won't be the heart of it for lots of people. But yeah, I guess if that is what you're after, you're never going to get there with normal speed dating, are you? Because they're the questions. That's the more usual stuff. What movies do you like? Where do you go on holidays? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think any conversation in speed dating is probably more about trying to get a sense of the person and get a sense of chemistry. And that the topic may be secondary. Certainly in countries where sex is an easier thing to talk about, it may fit like that. But for Irish people, I'm not convinced.
Oh, you even left a little room for doubt there, Emily, which was extraordinarily generous of you, I would have thought.
Do you know what I think? I really would go to one of these nights, and I'm in a happy relationship, but I would love to go to one of these nights. I just think Irish people would have the best crack. I think they would lose the run of themselves. I think it would not be about actually trying to share sexual fantasies in any real way. I think we would just focus on trying to who could be the funniest.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the things that people would come up with would be absolutely priceless because we use humor when we're nervous, right? And sex makes us nervous. Dating makes us nervous. And then we're asked to talk about sex in speed dating. I mean, I can only imagine the stuff that would come up.
I would imagine a lot of, not just the Irish, but, you know, a lot of nationalities would be nervous around doing this kind of thing. We wouldn't be the only ones.
No, not at all. I mean, the article speaks from a British perspective as well. They'd find it even harder because, of course, they don't have the humour. So they've got even more problems. It'd be even worse, more uncomfortable, I think. But I think here, you know, we'd be hearing stories made up about bog donkeys and pieces of turf and potatoes and God knows, it would just be fantastic. But would it actually be? I would imagine the idea of it is to get to the point where you're figuring out if you're sexually compatible to a degree. But fantasies aren't a good way to judge that anyway. In my experience, that's what I do for a living. Your fantasies really, I think, usually are better off not shared.
I'm
certainly not shared with new people because if they're your real fantasies and they're fantasies, they can take you anywhere and you can be thinking about all sorts of things that you would never actually want to happen in real life or that would be better off never attempted in real life. And that's very vulnerable stuff. So on a slightly more serious note, I wouldn't think it would be a great way to start conversations with strangers. From an Irish perspective,
I'm kind of dubious about it from any perspective, really, because you could, you know, you could meet a person and you both like doing whatever, but that doesn't mean you're going to like them. It's kind of almost a mechanical shared set of interests, or one interest, really.
What I was wondering about as well was the idea of, you know, we're all as a globe, we're all getting way more goal orientated. And I work with this a lot in my work with couples or with with people who are dating or single, this idea that, you know, everything is goal orientated, including sex. So, you know, everything's a rush to orgasm. Once the orgasm has happened, everyone can relax. Have you both had an orgasm? Was it a good enough orgasm? Okay, that was successful. So the dance and the play and the flirting and the anticipation and the guessing and the slowing down, all of that gets lost. And maybe this is speaking to that, to let's just get to it, right? Do we have similar fantasies? Okay, then we don't have to worry about the actually getting to know each other and seeing if we get on. And if it feels a bit like that to me, and that's going to appeal to certain personalities. But is it healthy? Is it safe? I mean, I would have questions. I would have questions.
Yeah, it also sounds like it's like a creep fest.
I think it definitely could be. You know, look, you've got to think, you know, I think French people have a very different approach generally to sex. And I'm generalizing, which, you know, is always dangerous. But generally, they're more comfortable with it. It's more natural for them. They don't come with the same repression and the same shame. So their conversations may not be as creepy. In the, you know, creepy tends to come with repression and sin and shame and people not knowing boundaries and not understanding what's okay and what isn't, or not caring, because it's all dark, it's all shameful, it's all sinful. We come from that history. The French don't come from that. So maybe their conversations would be more fluid and more exciting and more, you know, tantalizing and useful. But for Irish people, I think not yet. I could be wrong, though, because let's face it, I'm 55. I don't know what a 25-year-old might be into. And it's based for 25 to 39-year-olds mostly. So maybe it's different.
Maybe. The thing is about a sexual fantasy, is that and you said this earlier on, it's a fantasy. If you actually do it, then that it's not a fantasy anymore.
Exactly. And they often die. I mean, you know, it's really hard to play out a fantasy because they're fantasies. And who fantasizes about reality? I mean, if you're fantasizing about reality, that's maybe possible. But generally, like if you fantasize about a holiday and you go to Wexford to a caravan every year, generally your fantasy isn't going to be about going to Wexford to a caravan every year. It's going to be about something you can't attain, something that's amazing and out of reach. That tends to be the best type of sexual fantasy as well. Or it's remembering something that you did or enjoyed that was fantastic. Mightn't be with the person you're with now. And even that's going to cause challenges and blocks. Then you have the issue with people finding it hard to talk about sex. So they say, oh, I have a fantasy. Oh, I'd love to be tied up. And then that's all either of them says. And then they try to put that into practice. And there's so much scope for that being interpreted completely differently that it tends to often go really badly. And there can be embarrassment or humiliation or fights or, you know, what does being tied up mean? Well, it could mean so many different things to different people. So, again, I think we're not. The other thing is with porn being so prevalent now for younger people, for all people, we don't need to fantasize as much. So actually, I teach how to fantasize because it's a skill and a lot of us don't need it because we just put porn on and that we have our visual stimulation. Fantasy is dying for many people, particularly more literal brains. You know?
Yeah, but in your experience, Emily, and I mean as a therapist, that
of course
are people's sexual fantasies pretty pedestrian anyway. They're not that much different from the caravan in Wexford.
Well, I mean, it depends what you're doing in the caravan. There's a book, actually, I don't know if you know, there's a book released here a number of years ago called Bear, and it's a collection of Irish women's sexual fantasies. And, you know, there was the original ever book was in the 80s, My Secret Garden, and it was a bestseller and it's, you know, still been an amazing book. It was American. And so it's great to have an Irish cultural slant on sexual fantasies. And actually, there's some really juicy stuff in there. I mean, women, you know, who tend to go into fantasy world, maybe a little more, certainly historically they have, because they couldn't be done for that. They have a very rich fantasy life. And really, there's a lot in there. There's everything from, you know, I can go into detail if you want. There's everything from donkeys to Alsatians to caravans. You know, there's all sorts of things But that's because they don't, they're not plans. No one ever wants this to actually happen.
Mm.
It's just a way of almost the forbidden fruit, the naughtiness of it.
So you could rock up to one of these events with a donkey and see what happens.
A bit of turf. I don't know why I'm focusing on turf so much today, but I just think that's...
Yes, that might be.
Turf carving.
I knew a fella who did who would regularly tell people that he had this fantasy. Now it was about a particular woman. It was actually a well-known woman, so I won't name her. But he had this fantasy that she would be on the handlebars of his bike, and they'd be riding downhill, and the bike would kind of lose control, and then it would go into a barn, and they'd end up in a mound of straw where they would make passionate love there.
Fantastic.
Presumably uninjured from all that. So, you know, that's not outside the bounds of possibility there, really.
And there could even be a donkey.
Yeah,
that's
could be
a beautiful fantasy,
looking
but that's
on.
Not going to be easy to make real, right? That is not one you're going to make real
without injury. I think he knew himself it was never going to happen, really. But when you say you have to teach people to fantasize, do women and female and male fantasies differ? I kind of have a suspicion that perhaps female fantasies are more detailed, whereas a male fantasy it's like about a body.
I think there's some truth to that. Yeah, I think there is some truth to that. Female fantasies will often have something about the feeling, the emotional feeling of whatever is happening. But that's not always true either. Women's fantasies can be full on raunchy, sex based. Let's get to it, quite often, because that's not who they are in their real life. So that's where they go in their fantasies. That can get really raunchy. And men, this is generalization. And it's, you know, the loveliness of it is it's changing. And men, as they become allowed to be more sensitive and have more feelings and more needs, that's going to be reflected in their fantasies as well. So there's romantic fantasies, and then there's the ones that are just full on, you know, sexual fantasies. And there's lots in between for all genders. But traditionally, women's would have an element more of romance or emotional closeness or connection. And men's traditionally, historically, would be more the action. But again, that's a generalization.
Yeah.
But I think beginning to change a little bit, which is nice.
Are there common themes that you've identified over the years?
Well, you see, I'm usually teaching it. So it usually when I'm teaching it, I just get people going. So, you know, get them started. I mean, so that would be, you know, you start by maybe summoning up something that has already happened or something that could have happened or somebody that you would like something to happen with. You keep it quite based in reality to just start. You put away your devices. You might read something and then go with that, what you've just read or watched, if it's a scene, and put yourself into it. And that's kind of how I would gear people into learning how to and practicing fantasy, because, you know, it's not possible to bring your device, your porn, your books into an actual sexual encounter, but you can always bring your fantasy with you. So it can be really useful.
Mm.
But general themes are there. Fantasies are as unusual as the people who have them. So, yeah, there are themes. There's often, so busy, frazzled women will often fantasize, not often, but they can fantasize about just being taken by a rugged, handsome stranger who's just going to throw them to the ground and ravish them.
And would those fellas have particular trades? Would they be plumbers or guards or any of that kind of thing? Or does that matter?
Yeah, quite often. Very strong, straightforward men who know what they want and aren't going to mess about. And actually, very powerful men will often have similar fantasies where they can just let go completely and not have to make a decision or be in control. So it'll often be, you know, related. It'll often be opposite to how a person's life feels to them.
Yeah.
If they're loaded down with responsibility, their fantasies will often be about having no responsibility whatsoever. And women who aren't that connected to their own sexuality or are just really exhausted will often bring that fantasy, which is the rabbit being ravished one, because they don't have to own their desire. They don't have to own themselves as sexual beings because it's being done to them and it's not their fault and they have a great time and then the guy is gone and they can just zip themselves up and pretend that they're the lady that they like to be in real life.
Yeah. And I know, obviously, your job is to be non-judgmental and supportive, but has it ever happened to you that you kind of struggled to keep the poker face and you were just thinking, you sick puppy?
I mean, it takes a lot for that to happen for me these days. It tends to be more things. I tell you, not so much. I can't think of anything, but there was a friend of a friend many years ago. This is kind of good. It didn't shock me, but it made me roar laughing. I thought it was so brilliant. Was at speed dating, and they knew straight away it wasn't going to work for them, but they stayed, and they're a very, very bright person and female. And as the men came up to them, they just decided to have a laugh. And the question they asked men was, would you be willing to have surgery so that your face looked like mine so I could have sex with myself?
That's a big ask. That really is.
I just thought that was brilliant.
Emily, thanks a million for talking to us today. That was the clinical sexologist and sex therapist, Emily Power-Smith there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.